and go back to our series that we had started back before Christmas, I believe it was, talking about a noisy soul, all the stuff we have going on in our life, in our hearts, in our souls, the hecticness, the anxiety that we feel. And I want you to think back, if you will, if you were here, to the four previous issues or lessons that we had. And we looked at the great disorder, which is, if we look down here to the far end, unbelief. And it results in noise, what we're calling noise, the anxiety, the hecticness in our souls. And we looked at the lie that we have to have something in order for our life to be happy. Have you been there before? You're experiencing a moment in your life, and maybe we don't put the pieces together this way, where we're not happy. We're not abounding with joy because there's something that we want and we can't have it. And there's this lie that we believe we have to have it in order to be happy, for us to have joy, for us to be fulfilled. We have to have whatever this something is. And when we don't have it, the result then is discontentment, because we're now discontent with what we have or what we don't have, which then leads to anger, anxiety, despair. And we spent the last several weeks tracking it from from the very beginning. This is where we're at right now, from our noisy, restless, no peace soul, our stressed out, I need some medication life, back to where it all began, believing that lie of unbelief. And tonight, now hopefully we're going to turn around, and remember what that is, turning around. That's repenting. So we have to, as we stand here, be willing to admit, I have a level of unbelief in my life. Remember what God said, I will provide for you. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. That's what God promises. Do we believe that? If we do, then we're never going to be discontent with what we have or don't have. And so we have to be willing to be standing there and admit, confess, that sin of unbelief. Then we can turn and start making our way back to where we need to be. At the root of unbelief, which leads to discontentment, that's where we have to realize we're at. So let's take the first step tonight, and let's look at this idea of contentment and just exactly what it is. Dr. Berg puts it this way: discovering, this is contentment, discovering that God is enough. That God is more than enough. Let that sink in. Discovering that God is more than enough. So no matter what it is, I wish I had more money. I wish I had a better car. I wish I had a bigger house. I wish I had nicer furniture. I wish I had more relationships or different relationships. I wish, or I would really like to have, just discovering that God is more than enough. And when we grasp that, all of the I wishes suddenly don't have as much importance in our heart and life. Whatever state I am, Paul said, I learned to just be content. How? Well, he knew that God was more than enough. So first, let's consider the excellency of contentment. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6. Here's what Paul writes. But godliness with contentment is great gain. In the verses before that, Paul is warning Timothy about false teachers that are going to promote the idea that godliness is connected with material things.
Did you hear that? Verses 3 through 5, you can check it out sometime. But he's telling Timothy there will be teachers, false, that'll promote the idea that godliness is connected with material things. Do we still have those today? Oh, yes, we do. And they write books and they're on TV. If you have faith, God will make you rich. Godliness connected with material things. Let me read verses 3 through 5 for you. If any man teach otherwise and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof cometh envy, strife, railings, evil surmisings, perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness, or promoting the idea that gain is godliness. And Paul says, from such withdraw. Today that would mean from such, don't turn on their channel, don't buy their books. Don't listen or read their blogs. Withdraw from those. In other words, the teaching was that in order to have a better life, our current situation must change. Can you see that? In order for our life to be better, then something materially has to change in our life. We need to have more money, or we need to have more friends, or we need to have more acceptance from our peers or coworkers, or we need to have more recognition. All of that is the opposite of contentment. In order for the life to be better, there's something we need. This is teaching that is prevalent in our world today, and we've listened to it. In fact, verse 3, if any man teach otherwise and consent, okay, there's that word consent. We have consented to that teaching today. And the result is, because we've consented or we've listened to and believed and followed the teaching that we have to have more to be happy, the result is right here, noise in our souls. We're never happy. We have more than what we did 10 years ago, and we're not happy. Most of us have more now than what our parents did when they were our age, and we're not happy. How do we understand that? How do we comprehend that? Well, we've consented to the idea we have to have more to be happy. We get more, we're not happy. Well, go figure. That wasn't God's plan. God is more than enough. So, true godliness is a godliness that produces a contentment. True godliness is a godliness that produces a contentment. What is it that makes contentment so excellent? Consider the idea that without contentment, what do we have? Noise. Wouldn't you just love to have a life with no hecticness, no anxiety? Contentment. We can still be busy, but we're content. We don't have our busyness, and then on top of that, wish we had more. So that we would then get even more busy in order to get more. Now, let's consider the second thought here. The essence of contentment. Let's understand what this is. Philosophers in the New Testament times, they used it to mean self-satisfied. You are content, self-satisfied. In other words, they believed, these philosophers, that they had everything that they needed. And they added to that, if there was anything that they did need, they were sufficient to provide it for themselves. Self-satisfied. This wasn't why Paul was content. Whatever state I'm in, he said, I've learned to be content. Here's God's definition. satisfied with things as they are, because God is more than enough for me. If your condition in life never changed, could you be joyful? I mean, we spend thought, energy, and we spend time trying to improve different things. And part of that is part of our makeup, our God-given makeup, to excel and to succeed. But to the point where we do it to secure our happiness or our joy, that's where we've gotten off of God's track. So if your lot in life never changes, and you'll spend the next 5, 10, 20, 50, 100 years, some of you grown, and then you'll die and go to heaven, nothing ever changes, would you be okay with that? That's where this definition, God's definition, comes into play. Satisfied with things as they are, because God is more than enough. Here's what contentment is not. It is not a passive resignation. Oh, well, I've done all I can. I guess I'll just have to be content. Woe is me. My life is never going to change. I'm never going to have a car that doesn't have to go into the mechanic once every month. Or I'm never going to make any more money than what I make now. Oh, well, I guess I'll just have to live with it, right? That's this passive resignation. What's wrong with that statement, those statements that I just made? Something was missing. Where was God? I'm never going to have more than this. I'm stuck with that. I guess I will just have to live with it. God's not anywhere in those thoughts. So contentment is not this passive resignation. It's also, secondly, it's not a passive personality. And what I mean by that is we have different phrases to describe this type of personality. They're laid back. They just roll with the punches. They just let it roll off their back, whatever happens. That's not necessarily contentment. Christian contentment rests on the doctrinal truth that God is sufficient. Paul wrote, "My God shall supply all your need." Notice, that's a promise. But notice it says needs, not wants. David wrote, "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want." Discontentment begins to settle in when we reject the biblical view of God, rooted in unbelief that God has not done enough for me, that God Himself is not enough for me. I need something more. This is the lie, the untruth down here that starts us on our way down the wrong path in our thinking. Now, here's the next question. How do we lose our contentment? All right, let's consider the enemy of contentment. The opposite of contentment is, anyone want to guess? The opposite of contentment is on the screen, so you don't have to guess. Covetousness. All right. Now, how is that the opposite of contentment? Well, Hebrews 13:5 says, "Let your conversation," or your lifestyle, your life, "be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee." Covetousness says, who God is doesn't satisfy me. What he has supplied does not satisfy me. I must have something more. That's coveting. Now, here's how Dr. Berg drives this home for us. If God's statement that he makes in the Bible, "I will never leave thee nor forsake thee," if that doesn't quiet our soul, then we don't know God very well. I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, then we don't know God very well. If we had someone at the back door to our church and every Sunday people walked in and he gave them a $50 bill, and he did that for 50 years, and then he said, announce one day, next Sunday, y'all come in here, I'm going to give you a $50 bill. Who wouldn't come next Sunday? They would believe him because he said he's going to do it. And they know he's going to do it. They trust. They believe. So they don't have any worries at all. That Sunday when he announces that, Monday morning they're going to go out, let's say, and they'll buy something, which they shouldn't do, on the credit card because they don't have the money for it. But they know they're going to get $50 next Sunday when they walk into church, right? Because that guy said he would do it, and they know he's going to do it. If we believe God when he said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, if that doesn't quiet our soul, then we don't know God very well. Folks, this is how Lucifer fell from heaven. This is how Adam and Eve fell. This is how Israel fell. What am I saying? They all wanted something more than what God had already provided them. What did Lucifer want? He wanted God's throne. Adam and Eve, what did he tempt them with? You will be like gods. He created a discontentment in them. They believed that the way God had created them, which was perfect, in a perfect environment, the beautiful Garden of Eden, the master of all creation on this earth is man, and they believed that that wasn't enough. Israel, the same thing. We see that in their wanderings when they left Egypt. Oh, I wish we had onions. I wish we had leeks. I wish we had the melons from Egypt. And they grew discontent with what God was providing them. They all thought they needed something more. One last quote. Where there is the smoke of whining, complaining, griping, and bitterness, there is the fire of covetousness. The demand for something more. Now, let me ask you this question. Can you say that your lifestyle, your conversation, as Hebrews calls it, is it without covetousness? If not, then in what areas of your life are you most tempted to be discontent and covetous? That's your assignment, to answer those questions there. All right, let's stop there, and we'll continue where we left off here tonight, next week. Let's break up and have some time of prayer together.